This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. Today's episode is being recorded on Tuesday, March 26th, 2013. Our guest today is Lou Desjardins. Are you a senior SDE or just SDE at Microsoft? Or are you
I ended up being principal SDE.
Principal SDE.
No idea why.
So you got promoted from vice principal. That's good. He's been on the show before talking about various things, but today we're having him on to talk about the state of OWN, what would you say? Would you say it's the web application abstraction for .NET?
Yeah, I think so. The abstraction you can put between a web server and your web frameworks.
Yeah. It enables lots of different scenarios, the biggest which is pipelining, similar to the way that Express and Connect middleware works in Node.js or Rack middleware in Ruby. Let's just get right to it. We've talked about OWN a little bit before, so let's talk about kind of where we are now and what the difference between OWN and Katana is, and kind of what projects are using it and where we're going to go from here.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. To the first point, the difference between OWN and Katana. OWN, of course, is an industry standard for .NET community authored and vetted. And Katana, in particular, is a solution of C# projects, class libraries that are bundled in NuGet packages. Those are the Microsoft authored components to try to help make OWN, more powerful, easier to use on the different kind of technologies that that we offer from the ASP.NET team.
So just to be very clear, OWN itself is a community standard that's been worked on by several smart folks in the community, and Katana is actual physical bits written by Microsoft employees as kind of a stepping stone to getting started with it and to kind of provide an example of how you might write an OWN host and how you might write an OWN consumer.
Yeah, and some of the specific deliverables out of it are, they all kind of start with Microsoft.OWN as the NuGet and assembly names. So there's Microsoft.OWN.host.systemweb is one of the first ones that we delivered as the 1.0 milestone. That was the 1.0 milestone for Katana shipped at the same time as Signalar. And that was because Signalar itself was written to run on top of the OWN calling convention. So they took a dependency on Katana's system web support, which is how OWN runs on ASP.NET. It lets you run any OWN-compatible sort of technology on top of the route table and on top of an HTTP handler so that you can mix it into existing IIS-hosted applications.
Well, John, do you have a question?
Well, so just, to go way back to the dumb guy stage, this is the idea then, the relationship between OWN and Katana, is that roughly similar to like HTML as a spec and Chrome or IE or Firefox or whatever are implementations? Is that kind of the same? OWN's just a spec and then Katana is an implementation and there could be many more of them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hopefully the OWN spec is simpler than something like HTTP, but what it boils down to, the OWN specification says that when a request arrives, you deliver it to the next component by calling a func, and an iDictionary of string object goes in, and a task comes out. So within that, and if you're familiar with Rack, this is exactly the same model. That's the environment, and in that environment, there are defined keys. And in those keys, you're going to find the request headers, the response headers, the request body is a stream, the response body is a stream, and all the other primitives, like the server variables, you'll find those as OWN keys for the path, the query string, all those types of things. So what it does is it hides which server you're using as an implementation detail that your application and framework doesn't need to worry about. The advantage there is that now when you're writing a .NET web framework, if you run on top of the OWN standard, then you don't have to write your own iHttp handler. You don't have to write your own HTTP listener code. You can just run on top of OWN, and then when the end user, when the site author wants to run their app, they just use whichever server they're already using, and the framework just lights up.
So when you look at that, just nutshell. It doesn't sound like much, but it does enable things like being able to insert middleware into the pipeline, say if you wanted to do a static caching, or if you were doing a domain splitting to enable loading more than, you know, to get around the two call limit in that's specified by HTTP spec, so that, you know, if you have, I don't know how many people, every web developer should be aware of this, but if you make a request to a domain, the browsers are supposed to limit it to two requests to domain. So you can only request two images at a time, and then once one is done, you can go to the next one. And the idea behind that domain splitting is that some sort of router or middleware will look at all the image tags on there, divide by two, and then create fake subdomains or other URLs for those other images on there, so you can get around that limit. And so that's a big thing. We've defined a common interface for these middleware components to talk back and forth, and that also enables them to run kind of in the same process, basically.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things that's been a kind of a huge challenge in terms of sort of like creating awareness of Owen and Katana and what advantage it provides, is because like the literal description of it is very academic. You know, it's very technical. And it's not until you start to do things like add authentication middleware, add these other things that are cross-framework concerns, that the benefit as a website author really becomes apparent. Because if you're using multiple frameworks, like if you want to use Nancy and Signalar and Web API and you know, just a handful of them that are out there that are starting to buy into the Owen standard, if you want to use them all together and then have a consistent filter or a consistent auth or a consistent logging without some sort of moment of commonality that you can plug that into, you're really left sort of like writing it over and over for each technology. The advantage of Owen then is that the request comes in from the server, it enters this common signature, and because it's just a function, they can be chained. The middleware thinks it's calling the next function in line, and it doesn't know if the next function is going to be a framework or the next middleware. They're just pipelined. So the server calls the entry point, it passes through as many middleware as you've added, and then it just kind of flies off to whichever framework wants to handle it. They see the request go by, and they respond to the ones that they understand. So it really does give you a nice consistent story for throwing basically server neutral modules into a pipeline. And when I say server neutral, that's because now you can have an auth that works on IIS and works on HTTP listener. And it can be the same auth. It can be the same Owen auth module.
Yeah, and that's important because, you know, previous to this, this was all of the logging and the auth and all that was bound up kind of into system web and IIS. And so even if you didn't need all that stuff, you still kind of started it up whenever you created an ASP.NET website. And now, so there's been some performance numbers floating around out there that show, you know, a startup time to first byte, time to, you know, DOM complete and everything like that, of comparing IIS hosting an ASP.NET web forms or MVC site to an Owen-hosted or Web API self-hosted site, particularly just serving out JSON, are very simple things, but there are some performance advantages to the pipeline model. But the biggest one is just the ability to compose your applications in a more useful manner.
Yeah, the advantages kind of pop up in ways that are, you know, not even necessarily, you know, predictable, not necessarily expected. To be honest, when WizG first came up with this sort of simple function call for an HTTP request, The Python middleware pattern that popped up might have actually been an accidental side effect, but it's one that you've seen over and over. You know, like you mentioned, Rack with Node, there's Connect, and it's just so powerful and useful that when you're on those systems, that's pretty much how you do. If you have forms authentication, that's how you do it. You wouldn't write logging as, you know, for example, logging in a static file server. You would write your logging as middleware. So it's just the way it's done.
Now, Kevin, we talked to you a little while back about your site that you built on Node and some other things. Did you work much with middleware like Express, like Connect? Express is the other framework from the Connect author, but or did you use any of the middleware concepts?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the asset management framework that I'm using is Connect middleware. you know, for doing minifying and bundling and all that sort of stuff, authentication stuff. Yeah, definitely.
So we've got quite a few frameworks running on it. I think I know Nancy runs on it. SignalR, which includes, you know, everything based on SignalR, Jabber, and I believe Fubu MVC has converted over to it, and they saw a testing benefit aside from just, you know, the composability, because they already had kind of the composition story, but they saw a definite automated testing benefit from converting over. And I think Service Stack is able to run on it. I'm not sure about that.
I think so. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I haven't downloaded those bits myself, but yeah, there's quite a few out there. And so it's really gratifying to see some of that interest sort of pop up. That was always what we were hoping for when, you know, I mean, everybody was working together on the standard and finally came together.
So most of those examples, except maybe SignalR, seem like sort of full web frameworks in and of themselves, not so much like these cross-cutting small modules like Auth or, you know, that sort of thing. Those sound more like interoperation scenarios than they are like modularization scenarios. So is that modularization stuff happening as well?
It is, but it's happening kind of at a slower rate. I think it happened in places like Node and Ruby a lot faster because there was no prior art. In .NET, there is a lot of prior art, and that's the thing with IIS. Has a really mature and strong, you know, modularity story in it, and most .NET technologies already run on ASP.NET just fine. So the evolution and the appearance of Owen as middleware and some of these reusable components, I think, is just happening slower in .NET because it's not as necessary. You know what I mean? It's not as necessary because there are other ways of doing the same thing already. So there's less of a forcing function, because if you find yourself in a situation where you want to run on HTTP listener instead of IIS for whatever reason, then you find yourself into a problem because there's all of the modularity you're leaving behind. There's all of the built-in systems in IIS that you're leaving behind, and so then it becomes a pain point. But until you need to do that, you know, Microsoft has solved so many problems for you. It leaves a bit of a gap in terms of what the community needs to step up and create in order to fill. So, oh yeah, long answer for a short question. There hasn't been a lot of cross-cutting off middleware pop-up or things like that. There isn't really a Owen contrib, you know, community solution that's sort of emerged on its own yet.
And I think that part of that is because, like Kevin noticed, that a lot of the stuff that's currently running on Owen is kind of a full-stack web framework. You know, the FUBUs, the Nancys. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't, you know, there isn't as much need for the kind of cross-cutting stuff, whereas, you know, some of the Node ones or some of the Node things are much more smaller and well-defined in terms of what they do and what they don't do. The same with some of the Ruby bundling and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I don't know why that is. I wonder if it's just a sort of a .NET-ism that if you're going to be making your own portable web framework, you're going to want to sort of have it solve every problem you can think of. Yeah,
I think it's partially because people are always looking for a reason not to use something. Mm-hmm. And this is what I found in umpteen years of software development. Someone will always be able to come up with a reason not to use something or to write their own. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to, you know, garner adoption of your thing, you want to make sure it's got all the bells and whistles of everything else, because someone else will come along and say, oh, well, it doesn't support, you know, Kerberos off.
Yeah.
Well,
so you have to add it. You know,
yeah, and then you have to add it, and then it causes all sorts of other trouble. And Owen did kind of come along after those other frameworks were established. So at the time, they were kind of like, all right, well, we got to run under IIS, so we have all these other problems solved for us. And
yep, that's very true.
It seems like, you know, some of these things like Owen and then all, you know, the modularity that's possible with Owen, and then also kind of the whole pluggability with NuGet and things like that are coming along after a lot of the .NET ecosystem and the kind of the way the community works with it have already evolved a bit. So it's kind of like you have to backfill a bit. And so, because that might be a reason too, where, you know, when people solve things, it's easier to just say, like, here's my entire full stack of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it'll probably have to be sort of like the killer app that comes along that really drives it. And running on HTTP listener, not many people do that, because if you're going to be, you know, creating a website, you need to host it somewhere. .NET hosting happens on IIS. It's kind of ubiquitous. So it's a lot harder to host an EXE that fires up HTTP listener. So, I mean, even that isn't really a killer app in and of itself, unless you have specific, you know, domain needs where you want to run as an NT service or, you know, something like that.
And so is it possible, like, I know just from reading and internet professoring, but like that's a thing too with like node.exe, right? People, you still want to host it somewhere so you get the app restart monitoring and all that. Is there kind of a, would you run Katana under IIS or under some other hosting process that would monitor and, you know, make sure it's available and restarting and all that?
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, that's the, that's entirely possible. Once you're running on Owen, you don't know which server you're on. So if you're using IIS as your process and process manager, you don't really need to code for that. You're just writing an application and it runs. If another service comes up which does a different EXE using a different sort of like HTTP technology under the hood, you can just drop right in and start running on that. It's just that in the .NET space, you don't really have those. You don't have those yet. Where you're not like a Heroku where they just pretty much start a process and then restart it for you. With .NET, there's not that many out there where you pay them on a monthly basis and then you xcopy an exe out there and then they just keep starting it for you and keep it running. So yeah. So and that's why I say I don't think that in and of itself is really a driving factor to get portability to sell. You know, one of it might actually be auth. I think that might be the killer Owen thing. At a point where you want the same identity to apply to requests, where some of the requests are web API, some of them are SignalR, some of them are Nancy, all running in the same web application.
I could definitely see an auth middleware, especially I see a common scenario would be, you know, some web framework plus web API or service stack and is serving out the API and wanting to share, you know, authentication between the two. I think that also there's an opportunity for scaling within web farms. So, you know, having some kind of middleware that can keep all of the nodes in sync to enable, you know, to remove the need for sticky sessions and so forth, so that you can truly just go to anything, or if you need to farm a request off to a different machine because you're too busy.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
And that's the fantastic thing. One of the things David Fowler did was, you know, Jabber?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Jabber.net? He changed that so it runs as a Owen application, so it can run self-hosted or on IIS. And part of the activity of doing that was to sort of take the things that were modules and turn them into middleware. And once he started doing that, you know, it was he really, you know, got into that whole process because you start thinking of things in terms of middleware. You know, how can you solve this problem of I need to do HTTPS redirect if I'm on an HTTP URL? And once you start thinking in middleware, it's really simple. You just write a middleware that looks at the request, and if it's wrong, it redirects. Otherwise, it passes through. It becomes a completely natural way of doing your work. And all of those kind of things, like how you solve problems, becomes very pipeline-oriented. Yep. And I'm sure that's, you know, again, from the Node Express Connect kind of programming pattern, I'm sure that's a very, very comfortable, you know, programming model. Very, very natural.
Okay, one more question then on this. Like, let's say I am a web app developer, and you know, talking about, you know, maybe like the Jabber scenario or whatever. Let's say I've got a web app. I'm hosting currently on IIS, and I just want to, you know, take advantage of that pipeline model with Owen. Can I change things around in my, you know, existing ASP.NET app so that it still hosts on IIS, but now is also using, you know, taking advantage of Owen as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And part of that's one of the things that we're kind of thinking about from the Katana component standpoint is how do we introduce these things in a way that you can start to get benefits on an existing application and then possibly, you know, dig in deeper and deeper to the point where you can go all the way and become actually portable. But even without becoming portable, you can still get benefits running on ASP.NET. So if you add through NuGet, if you add microsoft.owen.host.systemweb, that package has a few public things in it. One of them lets you put an Owen pipeline on the route table. So you can say, here's a route, and it calls this Owen pipeline. So right off the bat, without changing your web application at all, you can start putting Owen components on individual requests. And if it matches that route, it'll go through its own little Owen pipeline, one pipeline per route. Digging in a little deeper, you can use an IHTTP handler. So you can go into your web config and say, as far as saying just wildcard everything, everything is going to go through Owen. If you do that, the way it knows which pipeline to run is it discovers a startup class in your project. So this is the boot story. If you don't want to do a global ASAX, it discovers a startup class and it calls you and it hands you an app builder. That app builder is where you add your middleware. So once you've added that handler, all requests come in and they go through the own pipeline that you've built. We're looking at something right now, actually, having described those two, we're looking at a third one that's actually even more exciting. It's a integrated pipeline module that will discover your startup class and run middleware for you. But if you pass through the middleware without handling the request, then the rest of the request is handled as a normal IIS request. So does that make sense? What that means is the request comes in and the Owen pipeline gets to sink its teeth into every request that arrives on IIS. And if nobody responds to it, it executes on the normal HTTP handler. So that means you can put an Owen middleware in your MVC application, and that Owen middleware will run kind of around your MVC controller. So if you have an Owen middleware doing logging, you can log every request, even though many of them are being handled as web form calls or as MVC calls through the route table. It really is kind of exciting in terms of lighting up the possibility of using middleware as middleware and having all of the existing IIS frameworks behaving in context exactly as they always have.
Right. Okay, so you can plug in without breaking anything that was relying on things working the way they were.
Yeah. Yep. And the reason that works is we're able to, so you know how middleware, if you like see the request, then you call, you say await next, and you pass the environments into the next one. The first half will happen in an earlier IIS event. And then the return half will happen at the final event, which is request end. So the Owen middleware is broken in two pieces like a wishbone. The call going in and the call coming back, you know, the async task completing, happen around the actual HTTP handler or route table taking effect. So if you change the user, you've changed the user for MVC. And you can do that from an Owen middleware.
How about them apples?
Right. So are there examples of, you know, we're talking about middleware opportunities. Are there some that you can think of or that you may have talked about internally that if you had the time, you'd write? You know what I mean? Like, I can think of things like, like asset pipeline things or optimization or authentication is something that was mentioned. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. All of those. Serving static files out of middleware, doing static file compression, output caching, authentication, logging, all of those concerns that you might want to just put in, just pop in place as an individual NuGet component. Pretty much everything that you could do a module for or a filter could be a middleware. Yeah, yeah. Really, the sky's the limit. If you take a look at Rack and Node Connect, the diversity of the types of functionalities and the behaviors that you can just plug in to the pipeline is enormous. Mm-hmm. Even ones like, even a middleware that's as simple as returning an MT200 for a set of recognized URL request patterns, which are known bots or patterns and stuff like that, just put something in the pipeline that guards you against bot attacks. And then you don't even have to bake that into your framework. You know, you don't care if you're using three different frameworks, they're all protected by that same anti-bot filter.
Are there ways to plug things in, like to, at runtime, pull in some things like an MF or whatever that would kind of add in, you know what I'm saying? That could change your pipeline as it's running or could pull things in without having to restart your app.
Oh, sure. Well, I mentioned the startup class once. So that is, it's a POCO, plain old class object, on purpose. So it adds no additional dependencies. That's your initial user created entry point. Well, that's the first entry point created by the user, instantiated by the host and called into. Okay, well, long story short, that's where you would start to create your IOC container. You are in complete control of how the pipeline is built, how your components are resolved. If you wanted to have anything dynamic, all you need to do is add a middleware, and have that middleware do the dynamic decisions at the point when it's executing. So you just put your own little hook into the pipeline, and then whatever changes you make at runtime, you just inform that instance, because it's one pipeline that lives the entire length of the application, you just tell that class instance what changes have occurred, and basically it's just code. You know, a request comes in and it sends it on its way however it's supposed to at the time.
See, I'd looked at doing a URL rewriting middleware, so that for people who wanted to, you know, later down the line they needed to change their site structure, they would be able to maintain those incoming links in the Google, you know, kind of index things. You could tell it to either send a 404, or you could tell it to send a 302, or the permanent redirect, and so forth to search engine bots or to, you know, clients that were coming in from old links. That was and you can do. I mean, you can do all that stuff. You can do it at the router level. You can do it at the route table level in your app. But I thought, you know, that'd be an easy one just to put in there and say, okay, this middleware just reads this CSV file or JSON or XML file and says, all right, old URL, new URL, just redirect it on and maybe log that somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that sounds fantastic. Because if you modify the environment, you've actually made a change that's going to be visible to everybody that comes after you. So just by changing the path properties in that dictionary, you've essentially rewritten the request. You've rewritten the path on the request so that everybody else downstream will see it as if the original request was even, without even doing a redirect, you can just respond as if you were the that same route. So yeah, you can do server-side URL rewriting. You could respond with a permanent redirect. Yeah, and absolutely, even something as simple as logging 404s that are being sent as a response, you know, even looking for all of the referrers who are sending you links that are 404ing, you want to discover those. You want to recover all that ad revenue that's going down the Bitbucket.
Or let's say you're a hoster and you want to enforce a certain level of caching and e-tags across all the apps so that they're not constantly hammering your servers. You could do that as a middleware too and say, okay, we're just gonna, you know, put an expire in this thing of, you know, all images or JS expire in one day, provided that the you know, the date hasn't changed or, you know, within a certain period of time. Or if you wanted to put in some kind of, let's say you were hosting data and you wanted to do automatic SHA calculation to make sure that, hey, you know, this data that they're downloading hasn't been tampered with. Or when they upload it, okay, calculate a SHA, store it so that we can verify that this hasn't been tampered with in case the server's ever compromised. There's there's a lot of things out there that we just haven't had to scratch the itch of yet.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing, is that because the signature, the calling convention of OWEN, doesn't impose any strong types, it doesn't impose any strong calling pattern, it is compatible with pretty much just the fundamental request going in and out. So all of those kind of things that you can do and then wrap them around all of these diverse technologies, you know, wrap it around web forms, wrap it around web API, Signaler, all those kind of things, and not have those sort of like impedance mismatches, you know, because if you do it as a MVC filter, it only applies to MVC. You can do it at an abstract enough level that you can alter the execution pattern of your request and take actions or just make observations and have it apply to such a diverse number of technologies without coupling that middleware to any server and without coupling it to any framework.
So when we're talking about middleware, then, you know, of course, I would assume that also includes, you know, it could be hardware, could be at any point, like we're talking about the hosting level, but it could even be like, you know, theoretically a box sitting out there, you know, modifying traffic as it comes in and out, or is that beyond the scope?
Well, at that point, you're starting to, you know, let's see. You certainly could have middleware, which is doing things like entering and exiting processes, you know, remarshaling, like making a middleware that was a reverse proxy for HTTP, or having a server that was basically fast CGI on the wire instead of HTTP. So, yeah, you can start to use these middleware in order to, exactly, yeah, deconstruct your app into like a web form topology. So you certainly could.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, a reverse proxy of HTTP middleware. I mean, that would be a fantastic thing. So you just put it in your pipeline and say, this path on my request is actually going to map to this full base URL and just basically proxy an internal server as a subdirectory, you know? So on the outside, you can just front, say you had like a legacy classic ASP site just front it as a subdirectory on a newer, larger outer application. You know, all those kind of things.
I kind of divide it into there's two separate use cases for the middleware. There's the network case and there's the application case. The application is where you might do OAuth, you might do caching, you might do other things. And there's also a network where you want to modify the request or the response going in or out to kind of, you know, check and do different things. And when you look at how, you know, high end routers and application delivery boxes are kind of set up, they, you know, a lot of them allow you to script and put, kind of write your own little middleware in between the other requests. And they do kind of go through this pipeline. Once you decouple the application from the server or the request response from, you know, the host, then you've kind of, you're back into greenfield. Yeah, you can do anything that you want to this. If you want to convert all the images that you're serving out into Base64 and embed them in the pages so that, you know, you don't have to transfer the binary across, you can compress it all down. You could do that in middleware. There's just kind of the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and I think that's the most exciting part. Like you say, I think that hits the nail on the head, is that this is basically a pipeline, a way to define a pipeline. And the connecting point is simple. And you're just choosing whatever series of things you want to click together in whatever order to accomplish whatever you need to do, basically, is all it boils down to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you say, the sky's the limit at that point.
So we've kind of talked about what you can do today and kind of what things are running on Owen and some ideas of why you would want to and why it's a good idea, not the least of which is, well, everybody's doing it. But that's never a good reason to just jump on something. So where are we going to go from here? I mean, aren't we kind of done? Isn't this just it? We've got our task of T, we've got our, you know, our funk. Do we have to do anything else with Owen, or are we just, you know, what's the future goal? What's the next rev going to look like? So forth.
Well, the current rev of Katana, with a 1.0 has system web for running on IIS. And for 1.1, the primary goal is to get the, like, production grade HTTP listener, and self-host story to light up. And from there, it's really just kind of making sure that we have the story where people can choose to sort of like shift onto this at their own rate, at their own comfort without, you know, doing a paradigm shift. I mean, none of this is about deprecating existing technology. So, and again, I'm speaking like largely from the Katana standpoint. So none of this is about deprecating technology. It's about sort of like supporting this emerging standard because it looks really compelling and seeing what kind of synergies light up and seeing where it goes from here. From just like an Owen, what it means to .NET, I think I'm just thrilled that it's something that so many of the open source frameworks are buying into and seeing benefits from in terms of testability and composability. So I'm just excited to see when those become kind of like more common, more like mainstream knowledge, that you just use Owen to plug together Nancy and FUBU if you're using them both together in the same app. And then, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing that kind of click, as if you're doing web development and you want to log, you do it as Owen middleware, just to see that kind of that next step occur in the mental mindset. Oh, documentation would be nice too. There's a horrible absence of really great documentation out there.
Yeah, and I think it's just because the signature is kind of so simple. I mean, it used to be really complicated back when we were trying to support .NET 3.5 and we didn't quite have the task stuff in. But now, I mean, you just look at it, there's no binary dependency. You just implement this delegate, and, you know, and then as far as, you know, what do you need to do? Well, you know, you've got variables that are in the dictionary. You've got response, request. Do you do all the stuff you would normally do? Mm-hmm. You just, you know, it's more about, I think the lack of documentation is probably more around the app builder and the startup classes and things like that. And, you know, what does that really mean? And, but the nice thing is that if you're if you're writing a site using Nancy or anything like that, you're not ever going to have to deal with it at that level. You don't have to know the ins and outs of IIS because you just have to know Nancy.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And that's, that's fantastic. And it's also intentional. Like when SignalR shipped and it shipped based on OWEN, its public API didn't change at all. There was no difference whatsoever, even to the point that the route table extension methods stayed the same. So you would say route table map hubs. Inside that extension method, it called the OWEN extension method to map an OWEN pipeline that called SignalR. But that was just an implementation detail. Nobody was exposed to that as a consumer.
So what would be in the future for hosting? Like could Azure or AppHarbor or other hosters do more? Like, you know, we're talking future. Is there anything that people could do in the future to make it better for me to, you know, deploy an OWEN app and awesome things happen?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, the possibilities are endless, really. It kind of just comes down to, as a hoster, if you want to create a service offering, what kind of technology choices you can make in order to reduce your cost of goods sold. So if you can provide a model where somebody can just push a zip that has, you know, the bin directory with the DLLs and then the static files, just like any other web application project, if they just push a zip to you and they fire it up in a process and it's using a simple HTTP server to call your OWEN app and they get higher density that way, you know, they're saving themselves money. At that point, OWEN is still, you know, kind of an implementation detail, but it really just kind of is up to whatever sort of emerges as something that could provide an advantage. And of course, you know, I mean, you can run these technologies on Mono if you want to, if you're a Linux shop. So, you know, there's that option also. If they run on Mono, you could also see how you could maybe develop locally on a Mac and push to Azure on Antares or whatever other hosting you're using. But yeah, those kind of things can emerge. It's just a matter of seeing what the market demands and if somebody is able to make those sort of technology decisions that give them a lower cost point for their product offering.
Can I talk a little bit about where you can get in on the OWEN conversation at the Google group? And there's also the Katana bits are up on CodePlex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like you said, all of the source is on katanaproject.codeplex.com. So you can find all of the source code there.
Including several examples of Katana usage.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Katana solution itself has a lot of pre-release packages in it. So there are things that you can use at an experimental basis. So if you want to experiment with, you know, static file or some other concept grade software, you can mess around with that. There's also the Google group you mentioned. I think the best one is still the net HTTP abstractions, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Net-HTTP-abstractions is a great place to send any OWEN or Katana questions as a Google group for the sort of get the community visibility and possibly some people thinking about it or able to answer your question if the answer is already available.
As far as the source code, so there's OWEN, which is a spec, and that's an open community driven spec, and then Katana is a Microsoft project that's open. I looking at it here, it's under the Apache 2 license. Mm-hmm. Does that take pull requests, or is that just this is the Microsoft official one, or, you know, how does that work?
Well, it started off as an incubation project. All of the IP is assigned to Microsoft Open Technologies, MS OpenTech, and so it is clear to accept pull requests, just like SignalR is. If you're interested, you have to contact the project and get a contributor license agreement, get sign-off, and then, yeah, it's perfectly able to take changes from community as soon as that kind of sort of like pullback starts to emerge.
And are there areas if people were interested and wanted to get involved, are there areas you'd like the most help? Like, I'm, you know, always documentation is one. I mean, anything else?
I'm not really sure. You know, I haven't really thought that much about that. No, you know, as with all thing community, you just do the best you can and you're happy for what turns up. So I couldn't even begin to predict where the best things might pop up.
I'd like to see people get in there and just go crazy with middleware.
Yeah.
I want to see the middleware that flips the web screen upside down and displays it back to the user.
Yeah. Well, what I'd really love to see is sort of like a community project open up around Owen middleware, you know, not even necessarily an MS OpenTech one, because there's a really high bar in terms of legal and process, and Microsoft sets a very high bar on quality, which is... I'm not saying that, you know, the community doesn't. I'm just saying it's a different kind of process, you know, in terms of milestones and deliverables and you know.
Security review and all
exactly,
that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So if you want to get a lot of the really rapid iteration and a lot of the really sort of like edge conditions start to like light up, the best thing to do is probably encourage an Owen contrib sort of like community-owned body of middleware that can possibly iterate and exist in its own right.
Okay, that's it for this edition of Hardy Code. Tune in next time when you'll hear John say...
You forgot to ask the questions from Twitter.
Oh, we forgot to ask questions from Twitter. That's what John will say. Dang it. So I have to hit the bathroom like you wouldn't believe. Anyone else want to take it from here?
I will.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Bye.
So we had two questions from Twitter. One was from Steve Massa, and he said the docs say CLR all over, but is that a requirement, or does it work with the DLR as well?
Well, if you're using DLR within your application, there's certainly nothing that stops that. The call signature that's being enforced in terms of iDictionary goes in, task comes out, that is pretty much a CLR convention. So if you're using DLR within your application, nothing's, you know, stopping you from doing that. Or if you have middleware that uses DLR, that's fine too. It's just that layer around the funk, you know, itself.
Okay. And the other one was from Eric Hexter, and he asks, what does MVC or web forms look like on Owen? I mean, we've talked about that a little bit, but...
Yeah, that's the one I think that actually is starting to look the most exciting. When we talked about some of the recent experimental work around the integrated pipeline, it really lights up some of those, what does MVC look like? Because it gives you the opportunity to put a middleware, an Owen middleware pipeline, in front of your MVC application, in front of your web forms, you know, page. You know, default ASPX can have an Owen middleware pipeline running in front of it for all intents and purposes. So, I mean, that's one half of it, that you can have an Owen pipeline running in front of MVC in integrated mode on IIS. The other half of that is if you are self-hosting and you're using HTTP listener and you have an Owen pipeline, there's some other experimental work that, again, isn't production grade, and we'll have to see if we want to bring it up to production grade at a future milestone, that can take ASP.NET, and you know how it can always self-host. ASP.NET as a framework is self-hostable because, you know, Cassini does it. It's theoretically possible, if you're running an HTTP listener in your own process, to run your Owen middleware and then have the very last middleware turn it into a sort of like a hosted, you know, HTTP context request. So you can sort of like host ASP.NET in your own process at the end of an Owen middleware. So that's another, again, not supported, theoretically possible answer to the question of, if you want to have your own process with Owen middleware and then MVC running at on the top of it as the final destination, that's in theory possible. You know, your mileage may vary. I think it's most interesting how these different things can compose together in different ways. And there's definitely no right way to put all of your pieces together. It depends entirely on what your situation is, what your servers are like, what your needs are. It's just that the options are available.
Okay. That seems like a great place to wrap up. So for take two of closing, that's it for this week on Hurting Code. And thanks a bunch, Lou.
Sure. Thank you.